You're listening to Vatican Radio. Hidden behind an ancient church on one of Rome's seven hills, a new secret garden has been brought to life by members of the different English-speaking churches in the Eternal City. On Wednesday, October 5th, Pope Francis and the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, will pray together at Vespers in the Church of St. Gregory on the Caelian Hill to celebrate the significant progress that has been made in Anglican-Catholic relations over the past half century. The church and monastery run by the Benedictine Camaldoli community have a special place in the history of Christianity in England, and it's here that the new garden has been developed, next door to a home for the elderly, run by Sisters of Mother Teresa's Missionaries of Charity. The Ecumenical Garden Project, as it's called, was the brainchild of Reverend Dana English, assistant chaplain at All Saints Anglican Church in Rome. She talked to me about the aims of the project and about the significance of the Church of St. Gregory for Anglican-Catholic relations. Tell us a little bit about the significance of this Church of San Gregorio.
One of the very best popes, Gregory the Great. It is the site of his family's home, his family's patrician villa. And on the death of his father, Gregory decided to convert his home into a monastery dedicated to St. Andrew, and would have been very happy, I think, to have had a life as a monk, serenely living out his days there as one of the community. Gregory's dates are 540 to 604. He, unfortunately, was so capable that he was commandeered by the Comune of Rome to be prefect. He was a very capable administrator, organizer, writer about practical things, not only about the ordering of life in the monastery, but before, when he was elected prefect, was responsible really for saving the city of Rome and the people of Rome from starvation on several occasions, and even from the plague, visitations of the plague. So Gregory, having been reluctantly elected pope after his tenure as municipal official of Rome, he was moved to send a delegation of 40 monks to England in the year 597 to re-evangelize the English. The legend goes that he saw a group of fair-haired youth in the marketplace, and passing through, he asked who they were. And upon being informed that they were Angles, he said, "Oh no, they are not Angles, but angels." So he was moved by that sight of vulnerable young men who were being sold as slaves to go to their own country to spread the good news of the gospel.
And so he sent the famous delegation headed by St. Augustine.
Yes. So at that point, really, that after Christianity had more or less dissipated, had dwindled after, during the time of the barbarian incursions, after having been brought initially by the Roman soldiers. So Gregory was really responsible for that resurgence of Christianity in England. Therefore, when the Archbishop of Canterbury comes to Rome, it is to that church and that place that he holds Vespers with the Pope in celebration of that historical initial sending out of members of the church to England.
Which is very much going to be featured, isn't it, during the 50th anniversary of the Anglican Centre, the next meeting of the Pope and the Archbishop. We're going to see them together sending out bishops, Catholic and Anglican bishops, to re-evangelise in different parts of the world.
Absolutely. It's really a timely meeting and a joyful occasion because really all over Europe, for some years, note has been taken of the growing secularization of Europe, not only among young people, but among the general population. So for me, it seems appropriate that there is a commemorative service, a service of commissioning of both Roman Catholics and Anglicans, of all Christians, to be sent out to one another, in a sense, and to really say, in this secular world in which we live, how can we work together to reaffirm what it is we hold in common and the good news that we have to share.
The church, now called San Gregorio, St. Gregory on the Caelian Hill, it's a beautiful church, isn't it, with many historical monuments inside it.
It's a less visited site for tourists than it might be. It's so close to the Palatine Hill, directly opposite the Palatine and at an angle to Circo Massimo. The discovery of the site, it's very rich and many-layered, from the Well of Gregory, which is a series of caverns stretching almost to the Colosseum, within which Jews were hidden during World War II, to the three historic chapels, the oldest part of the site, to Mother Teresa's order, which happens to occupy the former chicken coop, to the beautiful facade, Baroque facade, the interior of the church, which is marked by a beautiful pavement, and this very special chapel dedicated to Gregory, with the throne of Gregory dating perhaps to 200 BC, and then on through the beautiful library out to this ecumenical garden.
This beautiful garden, which now lies a bit of a hidden secret, a little gem in Rome, if you like, in that very busy tourist area. Tell us how the idea of this ecumenical garden project came about.
My own history dates from my ordination as a Presbyterian in 1984, but having decided to transfer into the Anglican tradition, I had my pre-ordination retreat in this place, in one of the 12 guest rooms and the common rooms of San Gregorio. 4 years ago, there were a man from Madrid, my colleague Mary from Rome, and a woman named Verna Verity from Scotland. We became very close over the course of that time. We were all ordained. Verna said to the diocese in Europe, the Anglican diocese in Europe, please send me where you most need me to go. And they said, Athens, we need you to be in Athens. Verna, unfortunately, suffered from vertigo and fell to her death 2 weeks after her ordination. So the notion to bring the garden back to life is really a commemorative gesture for Verna, who was one of those gathered 4 years ago.
The state of the garden was pretty bad, wasn't it, when you first hatched this plan to restore it and, as you say, dedicate it to her memory?
Yes. Beth Blosser, who is the garden designer who had worked with the secret garden of Villa Borghese, Beth, first, I must say, did a great deal of historical research to see what might have existed in that place, as was required by the sovrintendente of that area. She couldn't find any existing plans. So her new design for the garden is brilliant. It includes a labyrinth for meditation, a fountain, a pergola, benches for sitting, a kitchen garden that lies beyond the old cistern, and then biblical plants planted all along the pathways.
These are plants that have existed since biblical times.
They are all plants that are either named in the Bible or typical of this whole Mediterranean area. I mean, we have acanthus plants also, which are so classically Roman and figure in the designs of all the Corinthian capitals that you see lying around as ruins. But Beth was trying to adapt a rather irregular space to be a garden for really ecumenical meditation and just an oasis in the midst of this very busy city.
You've had then members of the different Christian communities here, Anglicans, Catholics, Baptists, Methodists.
Yes, it's called the Ecumenical Garden in our website because Churches Together in Rome is the sponsoring organization. It's a group of all the English-speaking churches in Rome. It meets once a month and typically has only had two projects, an ecumenical service during the week of prayer for Christian unity and a Lenten giving project, which is designated for an overseas project. This project is the only one that involves volunteering of labor and physical coming together. You're right, of Baptists, Methodists, Presbyterians, German Lutherans, Swedish Lutherans, Anglicans, Episcopalians,
and
Catholics. Santa Susanna has been very involved, among other Roman Catholic churches, and even San Silvestro. So it's been a very beautiful intermingling of persons working side by side to further a cause they hold in common.
And once it's completed, it won't be open to the public. It'll be used as a space for, as you say, retreats, conferences, maybe?
Well, its access to the garden, I think, will be rather semi-public, if I can use that term. We'll have a register, a book, in which any person who has donated labor or funds to the creation of this garden can sign in and sign out. The access would be for guests of the monastery. The 12 guest rooms, half of them overlook the garden. The monks themselves, the students, seminarians who live at the seminary during the academic year. And again, as I said, all those who have in any way had an interest in or a hand in helping to bring the garden to life. And I must say that St. Stephen's and school students who are just two blocks away have also, the Garden Club has also participated in the renovation. So that's another eclectic group. And another dimension of the garden has been that we have tried to help train refugees to be gardeners. And interwoven in the 4 years of its coming to completion, that's been another element of it all.
And you're hoping to have an official opening, an official blessing, perhaps, of the garden sometime in the coming months, I understand.
Well, we may wait till the garden looks at its best in the springtime, and we hope for me to preside together with Prior George, who is the prior of the monastery, and Steve Bossi, who at the moment is the president of Churches Together in Rome.
We look forward to that. Thank you very much indeed. My thanks to Reverend Dana English, Assistant Chaplain at All Saints Anglican Church, which is marking the 200th anniversary of its presence here in Rome this October.